You are Locked On Dodgers, your daily Los Angeles Dodgers podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
So I say D, I say D-O, D-O-D, D-O-D-G. D-O-D-G-E-R-S, team.
Hello, Dodger fans. Welcome to Locked On Dodgers, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, the number one local sports daily podcast network. Locked On, your team every day. Locked On Dodgers is brought to you by Built Bar. Go to BuiltBar.com and use promo code Locked On to get $10 off your first box of the best tasting protein bars in the world. This is the daily podcast covering the Los Angeles Dodgers, bringing you the smart fans' perspective on our boys in blue. I am Jeff Snyder of Baseball Central, along with my good buddy, Vince Samperio of Chavez Ravine Fiends. Vince, how are you?
Jeff, I am doing well. It's Tuesday night right now, Wednesday morning for you guys. We're just flying by through these weeks.
Yeah, I never know what day it is anymore. I can kind of tell the weekends because I'm still, you know, kind of working during the week and stuff. But with the kids home all day, every day, it just, they all kind of blend together. But I get to spend 5 of my 7 nights a week talking to you, so it's all good. Today, we're going to talk about one of the best games in Dodger history, and that is Fernando Valenzuela's no-hitter on June 29th, 1990. So that's the plan for today. First, we want to remind you, please subscribe to Locked On Dodgers wherever you get your podcasts. And when you get in your car or sit on your couch, tell your smart device to play podcast Locked On Dodgers. All right, Vince. So, you know, we've been talking a little bit about some of the best games in Dodger history, the best seasons, you know, different things. And I thought it was time to talk about Fernando's no-hitter. Fernando meant so much to Dodger fans for so long. and the funny thing is, by the time he threw his no-hitter, he was kind of a has-been. You know, he wasn't really a very good pitcher anymore. Sadly enough, he had been great, great, great for the first 5 or 6 years of his career, and then he was solid for a couple years. And then that last year with the Dodgers, 1990, I mentioned the other day, it was one of 2 seasons in Dodger history where a pitcher pitched 200 innings and was below replacement level, according to WAR. Even including his no-hitter, if you look at a 7-game stretch starting the game before his no-hitter, in those 7 games that included his shutout no-hitter, he had a 4.82 ERA in those 7 games, and it just got worse from there. If you go from the start before his last start, before his no-hitter, so from his June 24th start to the end of the season, he had a 5.42 ERA, and just struggled, sadly enough. And then his Dodger career was done. The Dodgers released him during spring training in 1991, and he was done with the Dodgers as a player. Obviously, he's still a Dodger as an announcer, but it was really weird timing for Fernando's first and only no-hitter to come.
Yeah, pretty crazy that obviously that's when it came. It kind of served as, you know, the final moment of Fernando's career with the Dodgers. Like I said, he was pretty pedestrian already, and even more so after the no-hitter. And you just kind of look through at his baseball reference, and you just see all the innings pitched, and you just kind of cringe a little based on what, you know, what kind of happens now. The guys are only top guys even break 200 innings anymore. And he had 192 as a rookie, 285, 257, 261, 272, 269, 251 before he had some injuries in 88, which sucks because he wasn't part of that World Series run. So, yeah, it just kind of cemented his place in Dodger history a little bit more and kind of gave, I would imagine at that time, gave those fans kind of the parting shot for him, knowing that his time might have been coming up.
Yeah, those 192 innings his rookie year, that was the strike-shortened year. He only pitched 25 games. You know, 192 innings in 25 games is a heck of a lot. He had 11 complete games. That 285 innings as a 21-year-old, it's just things you wouldn't see anymore. And Fernando has always been a cautionary tale. You know, it's always funny to me when people gripe about coddling pitchers, and they bring up Fernando and Oral, who both used to throw a ton of innings. And I always remind them, but Fernando and Oral were both Hall of Fame talents who didn't make the Hall of Fame because their arms fell apart. Like, you know, maybe there's a connection there. And, you know, nobody knows what the right answer is. And obviously, you can't just baby a guy forever. But I feel confident saying having a guy throw 285 innings as a 21-year-old is maybe not the best thing for long-term health and success. And in a way, the Dodgers are lucky that he was good as long as he was. They got, like I said, 7 really good years out of him probably, and then a couple decent years. And then he hung on for – he pitched in Mexico in 92. So the Dodgers released him in spring training in 91. He pitched a little bit with the Angels in 91, pitched in Mexico in 92, a full season with the Orioles in 93, partial season with the Phillies in 94, then the Padres in 95, 96, and part of 97, including he went 13-8 in 171 innings in 1996 in the Dodgers division rivals. It's kind of weird to look back and remember Fernando pitching against the Dodgers. And then half a season against the with the Cardinals, and then his career was done at age 36. And you know, Fernando is one of those guys who, like I said, he had Hall of Fame talent in his first from the time he came up at the end of 1980, and he was awesome through, let's say, his age 26 season in 1987. So you've got really 7 full seasons, and he had 32 WAR in those 7 seasons. If he had been able to maintain that for even 7 more, he's probably a Hall of Famer. But sadly enough, that he had those 32 WAR, and his career WAR was 37.4. So he only got five more wins the last 10 years of his career or so. And always a case of what might have been.
Yeah, when you think about the longevity, it is pretty crazy. You know, the Dodgers let him go in 90, and that was kind of, he was done, quote unquote. And then he ended up pitching for 7 more years through various teams with varying success. So, yeah, Fernando, obviously the 81 season was kind of the crown jewel. Just everything that happened that season that created Fernando Mania has basically propelled him to, you know, what is now being a broadcaster with the Dodgers, still getting standing ovations anytime they show him on the big screen with a little highlight package. So it's... you know, like I said, this no-hitter that we're going to talk about was just kind of the final moment for that, and something that, you know, he could always cherish and Dodger fans could always cherish along with him.
Yeah, absolutely. Fernando Mania is probably the most meaningful thing in Dodger history, or at least LA Dodger history. Maybe doesn't top Jackie Robinson in overall Dodger history, but the Dodgers' relationship with the Mexican and Mexican-American communities in Los Angeles was not great. And Fernando did a lot to bridge that and made the Dodgers truly LA's team and Mexico's team. And so it's for him to go out, even though his last season was not successful at all, for him to have this shining moment, like you said, in that final season as a Dodger was a great way to cap off his Dodger career. I think we'll come back in a minute and we will talk about the game itself, some of the highlights and different things we noticed. You and I have both watched this game fairly recently, or at least parts of it and chunks of it. Obviously, we've seen it a lot over the years. And so we will talk about some of the things that stood out to us. But first, we want to talk to you a little bit more about Built Bar. Built Bar is a protein bar, but you wouldn't know it by eating it. It tastes more like a candy bar. It is the best tasting protein bar I've ever had. And the healthiest protein bar that I've ever seen. And as far as I know, the healthiest one there is, compared to some of the bigger names, Clif Bar or whatever. The Built Bar has a lot fewer calories, just as much protein, more fiber. It's like 1/7 the calories, which is just ridiculous. And you don't feel like you're eating a disgusting protein bar. I don't like protein bars, but the Built Bars, they sent me a box. I'm like, oh, these are actually pretty good, you know, and not quite a Butterfinger. You know, I wouldn't just sit down and have one as a snack, probably. But if you're looking for protein and something that tastes pretty darn good, yeah, Built Bar is it for you. Check it out. If you go to builtbar.com and use the promo code Locked On, you'll get $10 off your first order. That's builtbar.com. Use promo code Locked On for $10 off and keep it locked on, Dodgers. All right, Vince, before we jump into the game part of Fernando's no-hitter, I want to do our obscure former Dodger really quick. And I picked a guy who was a Dodger in 1988. He did not, or he didn't pitch in the World Series. He did pitch in the NLCS for shutout innings. But he had been a Cardinal before he was on the Dodgers. And then he was a Cardinal again after the Dodgers, and now he's a Cardinals announcer. And in Fernando's no-hitter, he pitched the final 1 1/3 innings, gave up 3 hits and a run. His name is Ricky Horton. Ricky Horton, you know, he was a solid left-handed relief pitcher for his career. Nothing to write home about, but pretty good. You know, he 4.9 career WAR in his 7 seasons. All of the good stuff happened in the first 4 seasons. He had 6.9 career WAR in his first 4 seasons and negative 2 WAR combined in the final 5 seasons, I guess, or no, 3 seasons split between 5 teams or 5 segments. But with the Dodgers, he was not very good, which was a bummer. He had been good with the Cardinals, then lousy with the White Sox, lousy with the Dodgers, and then back to the Cardinals to be lousy with them again. One interesting thing is when the Cardinals traded him away in 1987, they traded him to the White Sox for Jose De Leon, not the former Dodgers prospect, but the guy who started for the Cardinals against Fernando in the no-hitter game. I mentioned Jose De Leon a couple weeks ago. I think he was a guy who 2 different times in his career had to be shut down early to avoid getting to the 20 losses. 2 different times he had 19 losses and didn't pitch his last 2 or 3 starts of the season. But then later, Horton and De Leon were teammates for the Cardinals against the Dodgers on June 29th, 1990, when Fernando Valenzuela threw a no-hitter. So Ricky Horton is our obscure former Dodger. I assume you have nothing to say about Ricky Horton.
No, just by looking him up, though, he was known as Ricky during his playing career and now goes by Rick.
Yeah, he'll always be Ricky Horton to me, but I've noticed that when I'm the interesting thing is his legal name is Ricky. But he goes by Rick now more when he's a Cardinals announcer, like I said. But yeah, his given name is Ricky Neil Horton. So, sorry, Ricky, you're Ricky. So, June 29th, 1990, earlier in the day, Dave Stewart threw a no-hitter for the A's, Fernando's former teammate on the Dodgers. They were youngsters around the same time, and Fernando hit his peak much earlier than Dave Stewart. Dave Stewart was a journeyman when Fernando was at his best, and then around the time that Fernando started having injury issues and struggling, Dave Stewart became one of the best pitchers in baseball. So he had thrown a no-hitter against the Blue Jays, winning 5-0 earlier in that day. And then that night, Fernando took the mound against the Padres, or Cardinals, not the Padres, the Cardinals. And let's just go back and forth saying things that we remember about the game, we noticed about the game. Vince, what's one thing that you took away from the game?
Yeah, so this game was actually on TV recently. I had seen bits and pieces of it, obviously. I've seen the final out, but never really seen the first. I think the craziest part is the first inning was the first base runner allowed on an error in left field by Kirk Gibson. Yeah, by Kirk Gibson. So, you know, if you're a fan or you're just watching this game casually, you know, that something like that happens, you don't really think about it. A hit in the first inning, an error in the first inning, a walk in the first inning. But this one right off the bat, you know, you get an error in the first inning that put a base runner on. He would go on to walk a couple guys in the rest of the game, but, you know, it kind of comes back for me like the Hanley Ramirez moment where, you know, if he just would have made the play, I would have saw a perfect game. So just little things like that right off the bat, you know, if you're watching the game for the first time or whatever, you're like, oh, wow, that he had a runner in the first inning right away.
Yeah, and even before that, the very first batter of the game, Vince Coleman hit – basically a routine grounder to shortstop. You know, Alfredo Griffin had to take a couple steps to his right to field it, kind of backhanded it, and kind of took his time throwing over to first. I don't know if he forgot that Vince Coleman was the fastest guy in baseball, or if he just knew exactly how fast Vince Coleman was, because he took his time, threw it over to first to Eddie Murray, and they got Coleman by like 3 inches. It was bang, bang on the very first batter of the game, almost an infield single. And imagine if you know, he gets that infield single and Fernando ends up, well, Fernando probably wouldn't have pitched a complete game because he threw 119 pitches. But imagine if he got through and that ended up being the only hit. It reminded me of, what's his name? Dan Heron, when he was a Dodger in 2014, he had a game against the Indians, I believe. And he pitched 6 or 7 innings, only allowed one hit. And that was an infield single that the Ben Revere, or somebody who's the same person as Ben Revere, Jason Bourne, maybe. Anyway, one of those guys originally was called out and then replay overturned it and called him safe. And that ended up being the only hit that Heron allowed in that game. Anyway, that's what it kind of made me think of, because this no-hitter was almost over before it started, because the very first batter of the game came within inches of an infield single.
Yeah, and then after that, he kind of cruised through, you know, just getting through the game toward the end. You know, Fernando was a little bit less in shape than he was earlier in his career, and you could just tell he was gassed. He was, you know, up there kind of on fumes, but sometimes that helps pitchers when you maybe a little gas, a little bit comes off, or maybe your breaking stuff is a little more on, and it kind of seemed to be working for him. But just watching him labor through those last innings is painful. I mean, he threw what, I think like 75 pitches the first 6 innings, and then ended up with 49 the rest of the game. And you know, just even watching that last inning, it was just a laborful inning that you were, you know, it's me watching it was just like, oh, please, I know he's going to get it done, but it's like, man, how did he get it done? You know, kind of similar to like when all the Kobe highlights were coming on and they showed his last game when he got to 60 points. But I think with like 5 minutes left, he was only around like 45 points or so. So you're like, dang, how's he going to get 15 points in the next 5 minutes of game time? And you kind of saw how it happened and you could tell he was gassed. So obviously a little bit different parallels, but kind of similar how guys just get over that hump and push through and greatness happens.
Yeah, absolutely. He probably got a little bit of help from home plate umpire Jerry Lane. There was a strikeout looking to Rex Hudler earlier in the game. I don't remember exactly when it was. It looks like top of the fifth inning to end the inning. The pitch was definitely outside. Hudler was not happy with the call. He just kind of dropped his bat and his helmet on the plate after the strikeout. And then in the top of the ninth inning, he went 2-0 on Vince Coleman, and then battled back, got 2-2 count, and then strike three looking on Coleman. My best guess would be 9 inches outside. What do you think, Vince?
Yeah, that's a generous estimation.
Yeah, it was definitely not a strike. Vince Coleman was not happy about it. He let Jerry Lane know about it, and he didn't get ejected, so maybe Jerry Lane recognized immediately after the call that, oh yeah, I blew this one. I probably can't eject anybody over it. There were a lot of hard hit balls. Not a lot, but there were Coleman actually had a hard hit foul ball, which is funny. Coleman wasn't a power hit at all, but he ripped a hard foul ball. Pedro Guerrero ripped a hard foul ball at one point. Craig Wilson, to end the eighth inning, he hit a fly out to Stan Javier in left center field on the warning track. I mean, he smashed that ball. And it was back then, Dodger Stadium was a pretty extreme pitcher's park. And I wonder if that might have been a home run in another park, because he hit that ball hard. I was watching the ESPN broadcast, and Gary Thorne and Norm Hitchkiss were the announcers. And Hitchkiss had just said, Wilson's only been up for a few weeks. He's only 2-for-9, but he has hit the ball hard several times. And then immediately he rips it, and Gary Thorne says, he hits it hard here, and the no-hitter is on the line. It's Stan Javier. And it wasn't a great catch. It was a running catch, but Thorne definitely sold it as a great catch. And, yeah, it was scary off the bat. I remember watching it live, actually, and thinking, that the no-hitter was over and maybe the shutout was over.
Yeah, and, you know, just kind of looking at some of the old stuff coming out, either Fernando talking about later or even Tommy the time after, both gave kind of different variations. But basically, you know, Fernando, when he found out that Stewart threw the no-hitter, he kind of said, all right, you guys saw one on TV, now you're going to see one live, something to that extent. And, you know, they asked Fernando about his teammates and if they spoke to him during the game or whatever. And, you know, he said that nobody really spoke to him. They asked him specifically, at what point did he realize what was going on? And he said, the truth is you always know, because anyone who says they don't realize is not focused on the game, is not watching what is happening in the game. But all pitchers know what's happening. Not that they think it's going to happen, that's another thing. But when it gets past the fifth or sixth inning, you start paying attention a little more because the game's almost over and you're close to a no-hitter. So, you know, that's always kind of the craziest thing is, you know, obviously the whole dynamic of not talking to the guy, to the pitcher when something like this is happening. The whole dynamic of, you know, the pitcher realizing it and hoping that he doesn't subconsciously start trying to get more outs, going away from what he's been doing the whole game. So, you know, it at least for this one, we get to see that he knew what was going on, but he even went on to say that, you know, he wasn't really thinking about it. He was just trying to get the outs and finish the game and get the win. So, but yeah, I mean, it was, at least he never really got rattled anyways, but this just, you know, continued to prove that point.
Yeah, what you just said reminds me of, we just had the anniversary a couple days ago of the Dodgers combined no-hitter in Mexico against the Padres, and I think it was Adam Libertor who finished out the game and didn't realize it was a combined no-hitter. He just thought he was just finishing off a 4-0 victory and then found out later, oh, apparently we just pitched a no-hitter. But yeah, if you're throwing a no-hitter, I imagine as a starting pitcher, you just kind of, it's a checkbox. Okay, I've allowed a hit. You know, there's the first hit, whatever. And if that box never gets checked, it's just always in the back of your mind that, oh, I'm throwing a no-hitter. And, yeah, it was. I'm trying to think of other notable things. That one run that Ricky Horton gave up, do you know what it was, Vince? Do you remember?
I don't remember specifically what it was.
It was a home run by...
Oh, it was a home run by
your favorite Dodgers from 1990.
Oh, Juan
Samuel.
Who also made the last out. Or he started. Did. Yeah.
Yeah, that last out, it was kind of fitting. It was Pedro Guerrero up to bat, who's, you know, obviously a former Dodger. He and Fernando were really good friends. They had been teammates for, you know, several years. Pedro got traded in mid-1988, and so they were teammates for 8.5 seasons, basically. And obviously both Spanish speakers. And so Fernando famously had some lonesome times when he first came up because he didn't know any English. And so you imagine he and Pedro Guerrero, even though, you know, different countries they were from, and so different Spanish, but definitely similar enough that it was easier to talk to each other than it was to talk to the English speakers on the team. And so it was kind of fun to have Guerrero the last at bat. He hit the ball hard up the middle, just, I think, deflected a little bit off Fernando's glove, just enough to slow it down so Samuel could field it right at the bag, step on the bag, and throw over to Eddie Murray at first to complete the no-hitter. You watch the replay of that hit up the middle, and Fernando looked a little bit worried at first. And then you can kind of start to see the relief when Samuel fields it, and then kind of the realization, oh, this could be the end of the game. He watches the throw go to first base, and then, you know, Mike Socha is immediately out there to hug him. It was just a, you know, to have Pedro Guerrero involved, Mike Socha, who had obviously been Fernando's teammate for most of his career. They had been Dodgers together forever. Just a really, really cool moment.
Yeah, I think he said after the game, they asked him if he doesn't touch that ball or it gets a piece of his glove, does it go through for a single? And he says he thinks it would have, which is, you know, nowadays it's kind of funny when pitchers reach out and unnecessarily touch the ball because of all the shifts and everything. It usually ends up going badly for the defense.
Yeah.
But this is one of those times back then there wasn't really shifting going on and ended up working out for the Dodgers that he did get a piece of it and went, you know, right to Juan Samuel, and they were able to get the last outs.
Yeah, and you know, Guerrero wasn't fast, but the ESPN broadcast actually mentioned he had only grounded into four double plays that year, even though he wasn't very fast. Probably didn't hit the ball on the ground a lot. And it was Willie McGee on first base who was extremely fast, and he had actually been going on the pitch on the first pitch of the at-bat because Eddie Murray wasn't holding him on. Murray was playing no-hits defense. You know, you're not going to give somebody a gap. So he was playing off the bag. McGee was going on the first pitch, and Guerrero fouled it off. And then a swing and a miss on the second pitch when McGee wasn't going, and then he wasn't going on the third pitch, which was the ending of the game. If he had been going on the pitch, you know, chances are it might have made it easier for the play because somebody would have been having to cover the bag, and so they probably still get the out at first easily. But, you know, they don't get the game-ending double play. But I thought it was interesting that McGee wasn't going, even though they weren't holding him on, and he had shown a willingness to go on the first pitch.
Yeah, that is pretty interesting. And then, of course, the final call that we all know and remember from Vin Scully, if you have a sombrero, throw it to the sky. You know, just another, probably one of his more memorable calls. Obviously, a no-hitter and stuff like that is going to be memorable right off the bat. But just, you know, Vin adding his flair to it and adding his spice to it, that makes it memorable even more so than it already was.
Yeah, yeah, Gary Thorne is good, but Vin Scully's call is definitely better. Thorne, he didn't even describe the hit of the ball. He didn't say anything when Guerrero hit it. The pitch comes in and then Thorne says, "There's one, it's a no hitter." And his voice kind of cracks. And that was it. You know, he definitely got the emotion, but, Gary Thorne is not Vin Scully. That's one thing we know.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Very Charlie Steiner moment. If not saying anything and expecting us to kind of know what's going on. Although I guess it's different
at
TV.
It was on TV. Yeah.
If there was a blind person watching, it would have been screwed.
Yeah, it would not have been a good call on the radio. So, any other final thoughts on this game, Vince?
No, it was fun. One of those you can go back and watch, and it's still fun to watch. The other thing is they did ask Fernando if that was the greatest moment of his career. He said no, the World Series in 81. Or his first game as a starter on opening day of the 81 season, which makes sense. But, you know, obviously a no-hitter is right up there, and rightfully so.
Yeah. I guess one other thing to mention, one of my favorite things is when a guy throws a no-hitter and himself gets more hits than the other team got. Fernando did have a base hit to left field in the seventh inning. At that point, it was a 3-0 game, and he actually came around to score. And, you know, bottom of the seventh inning, like you said, he had thrown a lot of pitches, and they even mentioned on the ESPN broadcast, Tommy Lasorda, if he had his choice, might not really want Fernando running the bases right now. But Fernando got a base hit and then ended up coming around to score on a Kirk Gibson single. Luckily, after Fernando scored, Eddie Murray singled, and then Hubie Brooks had a four-pitch walk. And then Socha had a four-pitch strikeout to end the inning. So there was time. Fernando got a few minutes to rest on the bench. But I always love that when a guy gets more hits than he allows.
Yeah, how many? Well, maybe not right now, but is that? I wonder how many times that's happened.
When a guy threw a no-hitter and had a hit himself, I don't have it pulled up, but I'll do that homework for next episode.
Cool.
All right, I think that'll wrap it up for today. Thank you all for listening to Locked On Dodgers. We really appreciate it. We know that the world is crazy right now, and we appreciate you spending some time with us every day. If you would, please subscribe to Locked On Dodgers if you haven't already. If you have Apple Podcasts, even if you don't use it, please subscribe there. It helps other people find us. And go ahead and, you know, download and listen every day. If you have any feedback for us, we would love to hear it. We're on Instagram and Twitter at Locked On Dodgers. Vince is on Twitter at Vince Semperio. I'm on Twitter at Snydog. DMs are open on all of those. I got a great DM from one of our listeners today with several good show topic ideas, and so we'll be sprinkling those in over the next week or two. We were always open to your suggestions for ideas for topics or questions or anything else you want to tell us. You can email us, lockedondodgers@gmail.com. Leave a voicemail or shoot us a text at 323-863-LOCK-5625. We are here every weekday morning, and we hope you'll be here with us. When you get in your car or sitting on your couch, grab a Built Bar, take a bite, and tell your smart device to play podcast Locked On Dodgers. And remember, you don't have to agree. You just have to listen. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
Now, tell your smart device to play the latest episode of Locked On MLB. Have a good one.
Say D. I say D-O. D-O-D-G-E-R-S. The team that's all heart, all heart and all thumbs. They're my Los Angeles. Your Los Angeles. Our Los Angeles. Do you think we'll really win the pennant? Bye.